This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
We want to take a look today at the recent session of the Oregon State Legislature. State Representative Virgil Osborne, thanks for coming in.
Hey, thanks for having me, Kyle.
And introduce your staff person that you brought in, too.
Yeah, I brought Jen Jasper with me today. She is my chief of staff. She suffered through the 6 months in the house with me and her, and I couldn't get my other policy guy down here. He's in Salem, but Jen did a lot of the behind the scenes work and made a lot of good stuff happen.
So Jen, I'm curious. I haven't met you before, but I would think that being in the role you're in is much like doing air traffic control.
Yes, very much so.
And how did you get interested in this type of work?
I was actually kind of pulled in it. He came to me because we've been friends for quite a while. And I worked for the courts for 18 years, and he knew that I was kind of wanting to get out of that work. And I started campaigning with him for 2 years while I was working full time and just decided I wanted to try something different.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So I guess, Virgil, overall, first off, what's your basic reaction to your first session?
Well,
with words that you can use on the radio.
Yeah, I'll try to keep the four-letter ones down. So, you know, I can just kind of sum it up by saying that it absolutely wasn't anything like I expected it to be. For whatever reason, I expected there to be a lot of collaboration between the two parties in the House, and we had that for the first, 6 weeks or so, and after that, I think the battle lines were drawn politically, and it kind of went south from there. Very little attention was given to the Republican Party, and we had to fight for everything we did get.
Now, what about legislation you had worked on? Talk about the outcome of some of those bills.
So my big piece of legislation was a cap tax reduction. It sounds kind of backwards, but it actually increased the cap tax ceiling to $5 million over $1 million, which would have really helped a lot of small businesses, because the way the cap tax works, it doesn't matter if you made any money at $1 million, it's just a tax at $1 million. So a lot of companies don't make a lot of money at the $1 million mark, but yet they're still going to pay 0.5% in tax back to the state. My hope was to bring that up to $5 million, which would have given them some relief and then possibly burden some of the bigger companies in the state. There were also bills similar to it going through the Senate, and everybody's bill just kind of died a gruesome death, and nothing got through. So at least this year, this session, there was no reduction in that. So that's probably my biggest disappointment. I did get the search and rescue bill through. The governor hasn't signed it yet, I don't believe, but that was probably my big win for the year, and that's going to really, really help the ability for the Sheriff's Department search and rescue teams to find people, and that's for the whole state. I pushed it through for Douglas County, but it actually is beneficial to the whole state.
And where did the idea come from to make these changes?
That idea actually came from our sheriff. That was something that we've talked about. I talked to him and Brad O'Dell, our lieutenant that oversees search and rescue. We spoke about that quite a while back. Gary Leaf, when he was in office, actually had tried to get that bill through, and it failed. And so I picked it up. We reworded it a little bit, and then it passed the House, went over to the Senate, to the Rules and Judiciary, I think, actually. They made a couple changes with the Department of Justice. It went through the Senate floor. They passed it, and then we passed it on the House floor in concurrence.
Did you have much or any opposition to it?
Department of Justice was a little concerned about the way it was written the first time around, so we did modify it a little bit, but it still didn't change basically the way the bill works. So after that, no, it was unanimous. It passed out unanimous, both sides, Democrat and Republican.
And you don't see that very often in the last few years of the legislature for just about anything.
No, you're right. There's always somebody on one side or the other that's going to disagree with something. But that one, I think, was just good for the state. It was good for everybody. So it went through really well.
And talk about some of the things that it will enable search and rescue teams to do and do sooner.
So one of the critical parts of a search is when a search starts is getting information up front. And a lot of times there's parts of that information that even though the police department or sheriff's department, whoever's running the search, wants that information, they sometimes can't get that information because just the way the laws are written. You have to go through the courts, get a search warrant or a subpoena. You'll still have to do that, but it kind of changes the way that works. It's a lot easier to get the information up front. the most important time in a search is that first 24 hours. If you can get all the information you need up front. And when I say that, that's not always directed at people. Sometimes that's directed at cell phone companies. Cell phone companies now, with when this law changes, they will have an obligation to give the information to the police department.
Now, talk about, obviously, the big piece of the legislative session was the exit by the GOP senators for a period of time, and everybody had their own terminology for it, a lot of controversy there. What was it like to watch that from the House side?
Yeah, for me, being my first session, it was pretty interesting. I was in agreement with the senators for walking out. They originally had talked to us about a strategic plan to try to make some of these really, really bad bills at least get amended or modified. And they had asked us on the House side to slow roll some of these bills, which we did. And then they came back and we gave them 3 weeks. They asked for two. And then, of course, they came back and there was no, the Democrats wouldn't give it at all on the gun bills or the abortion bills. There was about a dozen other bills as well. So, you know, we were kind of going, well, you know, this is all now in the hands of the Senate. The Senate walked. A lot of the senators that walked were not planning on running again anyway, and some of them are, of course. And so it was a little contentious, and I personally think the president of the Senate handled it all wrong. But after what really happened was the Republicans kind of took back control of the direction of where we were headed. So when they did come back, again, I was kind of hoping they wouldn't come back, but they did come back and they modified a lot of those bills. So the gun bill was gutted. Most of the really bad stuff in the gun bill was taken out. Thank God. We couldn't stop it. We tried. For 10 hours we tried. And the abortion bill also was changed significantly and parental rights were added back into it. And that was a big win. And there were several other bills that were also modified as part of this. People don't realize, but we killed 5 gun bills because of their walkout. There was other gun bills.
Now, do you think the challenge on the recent law on absences, do you think they have any shot of being successful at that attempt so they can stay in office?
You know, there hasn't been a lot of talk about it, but it sounds like there is, and a lot of it has to do with the wording of the way the law was written. And then there's some constitutionality about how it came about, whether or not, you know, I mean, if somebody wants somebody in office, if the general body of people in the district wants somebody in office, it's pretty hard to say no. So I don't know. I think we'll find out. I think they're going to challenge it soon, and then we'll know more then.
Some people have suggested that after the walkout this time, that next time things are going to be even tougher.
Yeah, the Democrats immediately proposed a bill that would change the quorum numbers to just a simple majority. So in the House, that'd be 31. And then, of course, in the Senate, that would be 16. But, you know, a walkout has to end at some point. I mean, as much as we all, and some of us did walk in the House on some of those bills that came back across, but you can only walk for so long. At some point, you have to do the job and you have to come back and, you know, you just hope for the best.
Do you think you're going to see some, if the challenge isn't successful, do you think you're going to see some House members, once terms are up, try to move over to those Senate seats?
Yeah, I think there's a few that are already planning on that, to take some of the spots of some of the retiring senators. And there are some senators also that I believe are, because of redistricting, or probably couldn't win the districts that they're in. Redistricting really changed the landscape of a number of Democratic votes in some of these districts. So, yeah, we'll likely lose some folks from the House over to the Senate, and hopefully we can keep the number of seats in the House.
And do you think all the controversy and all this tension for either party is going to make it harder to attract people to run for office?
Yeah, I do. I really do think so. You know, my point in running for office, there's nothing, none of this for me is personal to me. This is about the people that I represent, and their opinions are way more important than mine. I have three things: God first, the people I represent, and then me. And, you know, you can't go to Salem thinking you're going to get rich because you're not, and you certainly don't want to go there thinking that it's a great job because it's a tough job. Being in government is not easy, and governing is even harder. So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I love what I do, and I'll keep representing our people till they don't want me there anymore.
Going to take a break on Inside Douglas County. More when we come back. The interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1245 at News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248. Lars Larson coming at 1. State Senator David Brocksmith will be on tomorrow's Inside Douglas County. State Representative Virgil Osborne on with us now, talking about the legislative session, the tension, and of course, a lot of this revolves around financial issues. What about money for Douglas County out of the session?
Yeah, Kyle. So we did pretty well. We got a lot of projects in our capital expenditures that some we got that I didn't think we were going to get, and some we didn't, unfortunately. We did get, for the South Douglas Food Bank, we got a fair amount of money. We also got $800,000 for the Douglas County Fire District 2, which they needed it for some residential housing and that type of thing. And then Feeding Umpqua, we got some money for their project, about $580,000. And then we actually got a $800,000 for the Wildflower Preschool down in Myrtle Creek. So altogether, we got a little over $2 million and change into Douglas County for projects. And then we combined, myself with Representative Goodwin, we got another, probably close to $10 million for some major projects, like at Umpqua Community College, and the Kellogg Fire District also got some money as well. So we did good that way. Would have been nice if there were some of the projects we didn't get, but it was good, successful.
Where do things stand now on the state veterans home coming to the Roseburg VA campus?
Unfortunately, that was one of the projects we did not get. And, politically, I would say that was probably why we didn't get it. It's not dead. I think there were some promises made that it will come back in short session. So I wouldn't be surprised if we probably will see that in 25-ish. I think that money, that project's still alive. The federal money also has to come into that a little bit. And then I should mention, too, we did get $688 million for broadband expansion in underserved areas in Oregon. And so for our rural areas like Tiller, Drain, some of the places that don't have good internet connectivity, that type of thing, we should do pretty well there as well.
And I know that was another one of those things that really crosses party lines.
Yeah, it did. There were two bills. One was a little bit more restrictive, which is the one I wanted, that would have not allowed some of that money to go to urban areas for some of their underserved urban areas, and that gets into a whole category of discussion. But I wanted that one. We didn't get it, but we did get one that ended up giving us almost, close to $700 million. So we'll see some results of that over the next few years.
Jen Jasper is the chief of staff. I'm curious for you, what is a typical day like during the session?
For me, I prepare his schedule, make sure he knows what he's going to be doing for the day. I do the scheduling, answer the phones. I typically go to floor with him when I can. I'm just at the desk all day when I'm not on the floor and keeping up with his work. And then Austin is doing a lot of the policy work on the other end. So we're a team. We're a pretty good team together, I think. I'm pretty busy with everything.
You failed to mention you handle my 200 to 500 emails a day.
Yep. I forget about that.
There is no way for a state legislator to check all of his emails. So I have to have my staff, they look at all the emails that come in, and then the ones that are super important, they put in a file for me, and they slap me on the side of the head every day and say, hey, look, you have to read that email. And sometimes I still forget.
And I imagine, 200 to 500 a day.
Yeah.
Plus, everything else going on, that's a lot to keep track of.
Yes, it is.
So for lawmakers, talk about the way the day tended to run in terms of how early you started, how the flow of the workflow was.
Yeah, so, Jen kind of understated the work she does for me every day. We usually are in the office a little after 7 o'clock every morning, and we start with during committee times. Our committees usually start at 8 o'clock, so you have to be prepared for committee. It's not just like you show up and people come and do the hearings. You have to know what you're talking about. So there's a time between 6:30 and 7:30 that we do all of that work. Committees usually run most of the morning, and then around 11 o'clock we go to the floor for floor votes, and then we have committees in the afternoon. And on a typical day, you'll be in there by 7, and you might leave at 6 in the evening if you're lucky. And then there is almost always something going on at night that you have to attend with the lobby or some reception or something like that. So a typical day is about 12 hours. Toward the end of session, as we basically are voting on bills and on the floor all the time, the day goes much longer than that. I mean, we've been there till 9 o'clock at night.
Now, you had a first session that also included a new governor and new some new leadership in both chambers. That probably led to a lot of things being kind of up in the air.
It did. Plus there was a lot of new faces. I mean, just not necessarily just in leadership, but I mean, the majority, well, I wouldn't say the majority, but a lot of our House members were new, myself included. And then, of course, David Brock Smith moved over to the Senate as well. So, you know, some of that seniority was gone. You know, it went pretty smoothly, but there are procedures on the floor and in committee that you learn as you go. You know, of course, you get the original, they tell you how to do it, but then, you know, within a day or two, it's like, oh, yeah, I need to know how to do that again. So it's been fun. It's been a learning experience.
Do you feel like you developed some relationships in this first session that will help you in the long term?
Oh, I think so. I think we've developed some fantastic relationships, not just on our side of the political aisle, but on the other side as well. And you have to do that. I mean, I think the right thing to do is try to get to know everybody in the House, because at some point or another, there will come a time when there will be a bill that everybody there will help you, or they can torpedo your bill.
And what about the tension of the walkout time and the back and forth with that? How did that impact relationships?
Well, I think on the Senate side, the walkout was very difficult, and it forced some negotiations that the Democrats didn't want to do, and I think it probably damaged some relationships on, and especially leadership on both sides. Now, when the Senate was negotiating, our House leader was also involved in the negotiations. We as a House really weren't that involved in it. We were kind of kept apprised of what was going on, but we didn't have a lot of say so in the original walkout. So There were some people that were upset about it.
Now, as you head into the summer here, what kinds of things are you going to be doing as a lawmaker?
Is it summer? we have, so next week I go to Richland, Washington for a college course on energy, electricity and hydroelectric, nuclear, that type of thing. I'm going to be spending a week up there. We have meetings pretty much, and we're already booked all the way through pretty much, I think, about the end of July. Mm-hmm. with you know, political meetings, that type of thing, and appearances, and then we'll work on August, and then we're going to start working on our campaign as well. I mean, it's, you know, it's a 2-year term, so campaign started on the 26th, and off we go.
And what about things like county fairs and community events and that kind of thing?
Yes, we will be at the county fair. We'll have a booth there, and people are more than welcome, hopefully, come to see us and ask questions. We'll have lots of answers, and I'm planning on racing at the Black Bray Festival if I can get my race Jeep back on the road, which I think will do it. We will also be, where else are we going to be, Jen?
We're going to plan some town halls.
That's right. We have a town hall coming up. We just haven't set the date for that as well, but it's going to be a very, very busy summer, and I'm looking forward to it. We'll attend a lot of events.
What was the most surprising thing about this first term for you, this first session?
I would say the most surprising thing would probably have to be just the contention just how things were so, I don't know, difficult in the House to get along with everybody. You know, I mean, everybody talks about the divide between the Democrats and Republicans, but until you've actually walked that path and seen the differences up there, it was very surprising, especially when it came to bills that really, really could affect a large amount of people in the state.
All right, out of time for now. State Representative Virgil Osborne and Jen Jasper, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Kyle.
1256 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.